Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Tuesday, May the 20th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, experts start testing the sea off Kent as the summer season gets underway. Why the owner of a takeaway in Cox Heath is urging people to give them a chance. And a sports centre that suddenly closed last summer has been saved. But first up today, a Dover woman has ended up in court after taking on a rescue dog and not realising it was an XL bully. Well, Kate joins me on the podcast with more on this story. So, Kate, how did the confusion come about?
Well, Suzanne Humphreys thought she'd adopted a Staffordshire Bull Terrier. It wasn't until she took Tyler home last December a neighbour told her they thought he was a banned breed. You may remember it's now an offence to own an XL bully without an exemption certificate.
So what did Miss Humphreys do?
Well, she immediately called the police to find out how to determine the dog's breed. Officers then visited the 55-year-old home in Kimberley Walk in January. They discovered Tyler was in fact an XL bully and seized him. As a result, Miss Humphreys was charged with possessing a fighting dog under the Dangerous Dog Act.
And what happened when she appeared in court, Kate?
She pleaded guilty and the district judge was told how she'd taken on the pet, honestly believing he was a Staffy, the same breed as her previous dog. It was also revealed how an expert had seen Tyler in kennels and deemed him to be friendly. Prosecutors said Miss Humphreys had done everything she should have when she became aware the dog may not be the breed she thought. The defence added she's a good owner and knows how to deal with large dogs.
And what happens now?
Well, the judge said under the circumstances, he'd give Miss Humphreys an absolute discharge, which means she was released with no further action. He ordered Tyler to be neutered, insured, kept on a fixed lead and muzzled at all times when out and in a vehicle. He also can't be walked by anyone under the age of 16. Judge William Nelson added, you are a fit and proper person to own the dog and it must be returned to you.
Kate, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Of the top stories today, a Kent man has been locked up after pleading guilty to the sexual abuse of young girls. Jack Davey carried out the offences after engaging with his victims online and persuading them to meet up in person. The 21-year-old who lives in Harville Road in Mepham has been sentenced to 3 years and 4 months. A former police officer has been banned from ever serving again after being found guilty of throwing petrol bombs at a training centre in Gravesend. The PC caused £10,000 worth of damage when he threw Molotov cocktails at the Met facility in Mark Lane. A misconduct hearing found he's breached the standards of professional behaviour and would have been dismissed if he was still with the force. A pair of suspected drug dealers have been charged with supplying cocaine and heroin in Dartford. They were stopped while they were driving down Attlee Road on Friday and officers found drugs in the vehicle. A 30-year-old man from London will remain in custody ahead of a hearing. A woman who's 22 and also from the capital has been released on bail. Now, the sea at 29 beaches in Kent is going to be tested this summer to make sure it's safe for us to swim in. Kent Online's been told how experts will regularly monitor the water during the summer season, which runs until the end of September. Lindsay Faulkner is from the Environment Agency. She's been chatting to Daisy from our colleagues at KMTV.
Across England, we've got 451 designated bathing beaches and we take around 7,000 samples across the season. And in Kent, we've got 29 designated bathing beaches. So my colleagues will be out across that season taking samples, and those samples get sent down to our lab and analysed for bacteria.
So how often do you test and why is it so important that this testing is happening?
So we test across the bathing water season, so between 15th of May and the 30th of September, and we take around 20 samples at each designated bathing beach. And all of those samples, the results are uploaded onto our Swimfo website. And the public can access all of that data to help them make an informed decision about where they would like to swim.
And so if the results show poor, what happens?
So if the bacteria levels come back high, we test for E. coli and intestinal enterococci because they're the bacteria that can make you ill. So the samples that are analysed at the lab, all of that data is uploaded onto Swimfo, and that will highlight to people what the quality is typically like at a particular bathing beach. All of that sample data at the end of the season is analysed alongside the 3 years worth of previous data, and that's what gives us our bathing water classification at the end of the season.
What does it mean for the communities and having this testing, but making sure that the beaches are safe for the community?
Yeah, so we know that bathing beaches are incredibly important for our health, for our well-being, and also for local economies. So it's really important that we're able to do the testing and to highlight to people what the quality of the water is where they swim.
So is enough being done to protect our oceans and seas?
Yeah, so we know the importance of bathing beaches, so it's something that we take really seriously as an organisation. And we work in partnership with local authorities, with the water companies and local community groups to help identify where sources of pollution might come from. That community intelligence is really important to us. And we ask that if anyone does notice a pollution incident that might be causing a deterioration of bathing water quality, to please phone it in to us, because we have duty officers that are on duty 24/7. And if we know that something's happening, we can send them out and they can investigate and stop that pollution from happening.
At the moment, no swim warnings are in force at three sites in the county, Littlestone, Dimchurch and Deal Castle. It comes as a record amount is being spent on reducing sewage from getting into our waterways. Elsewhere, the RNLI has been called out to help a vessel that started taking on water off the Kent coast. An emergency signal was sent out yesterday morning after the small boat with two people on board got into trouble 6 miles north of Margate. They were eventually escorted into Ramsgate Harbour. There have been no reports of any injuries.
Kent Online reports.
A Sheppey man submitted fraud after trying to use a fake Cyprian driving licence to get a valid one here in the UK. David Melbourne failed his test 10 times and says he took a crash course before getting hold of a document which he sent to the DVLA. The 32-year-old from Riverview in Rushenden has been given a suspended sentence and ordered to do 150 hours of unpaid work. There are plans to use ANPR cameras to catch people who are illegally driving through bus gates in Tunbridge Wells. Bosses at the County Council are about to take over the system, which was previously run by the Borough Council and wasn't quite as high tech. Figures suggest an average of 74 vehicles a day are ignoring the restrictions. A truck has been seized on Sheppey on suspicion of being involved in several incidents of fly tipping. The vehicle was found earlier this month and is now being stored as officers investigate the illegal dumping of waste in Bromley. Depending on the outcome of that investigation, the vehicle could be crushed. Now, next today, more than 40,000 young people in Kent have signed a commitment pledge to not carry a knife and report someone they know is. It's something set up by the Violence Reduction Unit in the county and the police team that visits schools. The idea is to educate young people about the dangers of knife crime. Well, Lucy's been chatting to Police Commissioner Matthew Scott as part of Knife Crime Awareness Week.
My Violence Reduction Unit is running a scheme called the Commitment Pledge, where young people will make a commitment specifically not to carry if they're aware of it, that they will report it, etc. We've had over 40,000 young people sign up for that commitment pledge, both schools themselves and also the young people. I think there is a much greater awareness now of the risks of knife crime, which could be one of the reasons why knife crime is falling in the county. So we will carry on raising that awareness. But the key message is if you carry a knife, you're more likely to be a victim of knife crime yourself.
And with that 40,000, how long has that scheme been running? Is that kind of a total over several years who've signed that pledge?
That's correct. It's been running for a couple of years now. It's been the result of some fantastic work done by our schools officers and our violence reduction unit coordinators. But you know, 40,000 is a substantial number of our school's population, and that will continue to grow as more and more young people sign it.
Obviously, this week is an awareness week. How important is that, you know, just to kind of talk about these issues and just raise that awareness?
The awareness weeks are good because they focus everyone's minds on all of the different aspects of tackling knife crime. It's not just one part, and it's also not just one agency. So we will work with councils, with schools and the police this week in order to not only just raise awareness, but try to take more weapons off the street and do some more enforcement as well. So during the course of this week, my hope is we will be able to take more knives off the streets, raise more awareness and continue those numbers coming down. It is a partnership. We rely very much on the work we do with other agencies. But because we are so well joined up in this county, we're starting to see that really positive progress make a breakthrough.
And just finally, Matthew, what would your message be to anyone, you know, particularly maybe young people who have heard things and think, oh, I might need to carry a knife for my own safety? What would your message be to kind of deter them from that idea?
If you carry a knife, you're more likely to be a victim of knife crime yourself. It's not worth the risk. Please look at the many different sources of information that we have that can help you. If you are worried about yourself or anybody else, you can talk to Childline or you can talk to Fearless, a campaign run by Crime Stoppers, completely anonymously. You don't need to suffer in silence. You don't need to carry a knife.
Kent Online reports.
A new intensive care unit is going to be built at a Kent hospital in a bid to ease pressure on current services. Councillors in Dartford have agreed to give £7 million towards the £25 million facility at Darrant Valley. We're told the state-of-the-art building will have 15 beds and could open by mid-2027. Families say they're concerned about the safety of a bridge in Whitstable. The narrow footpath on Hamshades Bridge is used by pupils at the Whitstable School and Swalecliff Primary. Parents say it's barely wide enough for a buggy and they're worried someone will get hurt. Kent County Council say they're investigating possible solutions. A fundraiser's been set up for a couple whose home was destroyed in a fire in Margate. Carol and Ken Charles lost their three dogs in the blaze on Millmead Road in the early hours of last Friday. They're currently living in a hotel. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help them get back on their feet. A decision on plans for 300 new homes on farmland in Canterbury has been deferred. Councillors debated over the scheme in Beaksbourne for 3 hours, but opted to ask for more information about transport plans and sustainability. There have been more than 300 letters of objection to the project, but the council are under pressure to meet their housing targets. Now, this is one of our most read stories on the website today. The owner of a new takeaway in Cox Heath is urging people to give him a chance after a backlash over the serving of halal meat. Sam Haidari is the director of Cox Heath Pizza and Chicken, but he's come under fire for using halal certified meat, which some animal welfare groups have called unnecessarily cruel. But Sam says he wants to be open and honest about his suppliers and is hoping the village will give it a go. He's been speaking to our reporter Ellie Simmons about the opening and says the initial response has been good, but it would be better when nearby roadworks are finished too.
We're also bringing in delivery services. That will start within about 3 or 4 weeks. We're just waiting for the loose road to open. Because if I start doing deliveries now, your food will be there in about 3 hours and you're going to say, my food is cold, where is my food? So we don't want that. We want to start on a good foot. As soon as that's sorted out, we'll be able to sort everything else out in terms of getting the delivery to your door. Collection and takeaways are open as it is right now.
So has the loose road been part of the reasons you haven't started off doing deliveries from the outset?
I mean, to be fair with you, with all our shops, we first want to welcome our customers to come in and see the premises that we've got. As you can see all around, when you do take a look around, everything is not like a typical chicken shop. We've taken the high standards, whether it's the food hygiene, the flooring, the tiles, the TVs, regardless of what you say, we've ensured it's top quality. But loose road has been a big pain for us because we normally start deliveries in about 2 weeks time from opening. But because they're saying they're going to open end of first week of June, as soon as that's done, we'll look into bringing the right delivery drivers that can bring food that is hot to your door.
What would your message be to the customers that haven't quite tried your shop yet?
Come in, give us a try, because be open about it. Regardless of what meat is or where it comes from, it's amazing. We do our best. We have top chefs, top quality food. Any issues, you let me know and I'll personally deal for you. But please come in and give us a try, because that's what all about. That's what it's about in a village, where we help out each other. We try each other's food. And being someone from a village, growing up in a village settings, I know what it's like to be in a community and support each other. So I ask for their support right now. Come in and give us a try, and hopefully we can give you the best service and best food.
Kent Online News.
Southeastern say they've completed the first phase of a £27 million upgrade of their high-speed trains. New carpets, seats and USB charging points have been installed on the Javelin service, which runs through Kent. The next phase involves a refurb of the exterior carriages, new information boards and a better CCTV system. A former mining site that's becoming a popular walking spot near Sevenoaks has reopened. Otford Chalk Pit Street was closed off last year after several sinkholes were discovered. Council bosses say they've carried out surveys to make sure the site is safe. Now, more than £10,000 has been donated to a Sittingbourne family so they can convert their home to accommodate their poorly son. Six-year-old Reuben Whitehead has to be connected to a feeding tube up to 16 hours a day after being born early and developing complications. Well, a fundraiser was set up so space could be created for a specialist bed, bath, medical equipment and nurses. Friends Grace and Amy started the money collection.
They can come to ours and be having a great time, but everything has to be cut short because of his medical needs. And just as friends, you want to be able to do as much as you can in, you know, in every way possible.
It's never a relaxing. There's not at no. any point can they actually sit down and relax and in
yeah.
have any time like to enjoy. Even yeah. when we're all out, it's always, it's constant, isn't it? Constantly yeah. watching or yeah. does he need anything? Is he in any pain or whatever? So it's very difficult for them to actually relax and have some fun, really.
You know, when you told them, what was their reaction?
It was actually me. We've been obviously reaching out to local businesses and stuff, trying to see what we could do to raise funds and push this GoFundMe. And I actually woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and me and Amy have become best friends from this. And I literally voice noted Amy at 6 a.m. I was like, I've had a really good idea. I'm going to contact the local paper with Alan Janine's permission and to get a bit of awareness raised and stuff. Because I think there's a lot of people that just think it's just a premature baby and not realising actually what's going on. So I said, I'm going to reach out. And obviously I sent the email and obviously asked their permission. Yeah, just to see what we could do, really.
And we've got a link to that fundraiser within the story at Kent Online. Meantime, an 8-year-old Kent boy has been praised for his bravery after taking over a 999 call when his mum collapsed. Henry gave dispatchers vital information about his mum's condition after she lost consciousness at their home in Ashford. He even placed her in the recovery position. He's been given a special recognition certificate. The designer behind one of the gardens at the Chelsea Flower Show is helping transform outdoor space at a Kent charity. Joshua Fenton will be creating a peaceful area for patients, family and staff at Eleanor Hospice in Gravesend. Work, we're told, is due to start later this year. And finally, the new woman in charge of Kent's smallest theatre is hoping it'll become a real community asset. The Tom Thumb in Margate has just 45 seats and is now run by Alison Morgan-Jones, who's previously been at the Astor Theatre in Deal. She's drawing up a programme of events and is also inviting volunteers to get involved.
Kent Online Sports.
The swimming club chairman's warned they may have to pull out of a national competition this summer following the closure of their normal training facility. Competitors haven't been able to use Folkestone Sports Centre after it suddenly shut last summer. It's been confirmed the site has now been taken over, but it's unclear when it might reopen. I've been chatting to Ian Howes, who's the chairman of Folkestone Swimming Club.
Grateful to finally have an announcement for it because we've been waiting for it for some time. We had worked out who the buyers were and had been speaking to them off the record for some time about when things are likely to start moving, and we were told an announcement was going to be coming out shortly. Obviously, the main disappointment in there is there's no time frame involved until we're able to actually meet with them and find out how we fit into their plans and things like that. We're always going to be nervous.
Just remind us how everything impacted you, because you use the centre obviously regularly.
But one thing we have lost is swimmers. We've lost a lot of swimmers to clubs where the grass is always greener because they've got a proper pool to train in. And that has been a major issue. We're possibly going to have to pull out of the National League this year because we haven't got the swimmers at the top end, because most of them have gone to other clubs. Those that have stayed, we want to try and make it work for them and stay in there, but it's a decision we're going to have to make at some point. But that needs to be done by the end of September, so we've got a little bit of time. If we get the ball back by then, who knows, we may start reattracting all the swimmers again. But until such time as the pool reopens and we start training properly, we can't do anything on that front.
Folkestone Sports Centre closed in July. I remember it was just before the summer holidays, wasn't it? That it suddenly shut completely out of the blue. I presume since then that site has just been mothballed. I mean, what do you understand as to what sort of work needs to be done to get it back open again?
Speaking to various people who've been in there since it closed down, there's a lot of work to be done behind the scenes. Obviously, the behind the scenes we never got to see. The changing in the swimming pool weren't great. They were in need of refurbishment anyway, so we anticipate that will be one of the things they need to do. The good thing is they have kept water in the pool. They've kept the pumps running to keep it, to keep those. So we know those are still serviceable. Heating-wise, I don't know. I don't know if they've been heating it or not. I'd assume not, to why heat something that someone's not swimming in. I have to have a meeting with the CEO of the Sports Trust at some point when he's back in the country and see if there's any way we can get in earlier, even if it's not open to the general public. Because during COVID, we went, as they called it, beach reading, so we weren't using the changing rooms, and there's no reason why we couldn't do the same still if they're happy for us to do that. But that's part of the negotiation, I suppose.
On to cricket, and Kent have suffered another defeat in the county championship. They lost by 3 wickets to Gloucestershire on the final day in Bristol. It means they're now third from bottom in the Division 2 table. Videos emerged of a Maidstone United fan slide tackling a rival supporter after their playoff final defeat at the weekend. Boreham Wood fans went onto the pitch after they beat the Stones on Sunday, with one supporter seeming to taunt the visiting crowds. You can see the footage of the moment at Kent Online. And in tennis, Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's starting to find her feet playing on clay. The 22-year-old from Orpington is through to the second round of the tournament in Strasbourg. She'll face American Danielle Collins in the last 16 tomorrow. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.